final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Crap!
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you. God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's old Shazia's out here in what's left of my old mad science laboratory. I got my new mad science laboratory getting ready to come online here pretty soon. I can't wait for all that because I got a lot more space. Don't have to wade through all the junk and fall over stuff and trip over wires and so on and so forth. They call me insane, but I call it mad science because I disagree with the mainstream science points of view. I've read the books. I've seen it all. I've heard it all. But I'm thinking outside the box because I like it outside the box. It's not so crowded. You can be a free thinker outside the box. Of course, now you're going to make a few people angry because they don't agree with what you got to say because you're not quoting directly from the book. But you know, there's a lot of energy out there. We're floating around in the sea of energy. If you go to the wrong neighborhood, such as a canyon with a bunch of loose rocks, and you get a little too loud, you raise your voice up, there's enough energy in your voice to start an avalanche that will come down and land on top of your head. Same thing could be applied to going out there in the snow. You know, so a lot of skiers have problems when they get out there, so all it takes is one loud noise to start an avalanche. Looks like my dog wants outside. Doggone you, dog. Right in the middle of a radio show. What's wrong with you? Head out on the highway searching for adventure and whatever comes your way, dog. Ha! Yeah, that dog's been around for a while. He's an old dog, but he's a good dog. Anyway, like I was saying, I threw a link up there in the chat room from a friend named Justin out here that he also believes in alternatives to what the mainstream's talking about. You know, different definitions for what electricity really is. So with that said, I'm trying to see if anybody's fixing to call in over here from the Mad Science Room. I don't see anybody. Anyway. So, I'm working on a whole lot different alternative energy than the average Joe's out there, you know. I'm looking at electricity a whole separate way than everybody else. See, I got in a big old feud over currents, watts, and amps, and all that kind of stuff, and I kept trying to tell a particular individual that this is what I was working on, you know. Sure, in the modern day science, there's a scale of measurement. There's a way by which you do it by the book, and the math all has to add up and this and that and the other thing. But it's not what I'm working on. See, free energy's out there. It definitely is out there. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough because you're floating in the sea of energy. You are energy yourself. You have protons, neutrons, and electrons, what makes up the atom all over through your body. Your body's three-quarters water. Water is hydrogen, H2O. And so, hydrogen and oxygen, H2O. So both of those are combustible. They ask why people spontaneously combust. I would say spontaneous combustion probably has something to do with all that hydrogen and oxygen and something going haywire in the electrical system in the body. That's just my thought, not to mention the fact that you got a little bit of oil and other things in there, salt for electrolytes. So you're a walking chemistry set. Either way, you're energy. So with that said, there's energy all the way around you. You know, what people out there looking for is essentially the holy grail of electricity. Something that you can go into modern mainstream and just plug in and run everybody's house, and it's all said and done, and, you know, everybody got free electricity. Is it possible? Dang straight it's possible. It's more than possible. But the problem is getting all the researchers together and putting their egos aside and their educations aside and actually sitting there and thinking outside the box long enough to figure all this out. Every single piece of the puzzle there to generate all the electricity you could use in a lifetime was pointed out by Nikola Tesla. Guys like Thomas Edison and all them back in the day, you know, they knew a whole lot of stuff about what they were doing, but then there were things that they didn't have no clue about what they were doing. They were testing. They were finding things outside the box. Looks like I got Muddy calling in. Yay, how's it going, Muddy? Yeah, well, I can't hear you, so you're going to have to either get close to the microphone or turn your volume up or...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sound like a commercial. I hear me too. Echo, 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 echo. So anyway, there's been scientists all through history that's had all kinds of good designs and good information and stuff like that. Most of them were loners and some of them worked together, but for the most part, you couldn't bring all these brilliant minds to the table because their egos or their education would differ enough to they would have disputes or whatever. I set out quite some time ago to try to bring together all the brilliant minds out there on YouTube and all around the world that I watched these videos. Some of these channels, small channels that should have had millions of views on their work because their work was really substantial as far as generating electricity or anomalies therein, anything in the alternative energy research. I was trying to get these people to the table because I knew the guys working on the Wimshurst and the Van de Graaff and all the different Bedini motors and some of Stan Meyer's hydrogen work, and it just goes on and on. There's so many energy devices out there, it's just mind-boggling. And if I could get these guys to the table long enough to get these guys working together, the free energy device that everyone in this world's looking for could be built. Of course, we had a few snags in the process of trying to get everyone together because folks just wouldn't agree on which direction to go. And I'm sitting there saying it all along. I'm saying it's right there, it's right there, it's right there. Pick up that puzzle over there and that piece and that piece and that piece and slap them together and you got what you're looking for. The guys out there in the Overunity community and the Zero Point Energy community have got it all wrong. They're continuously trying to get out more than they put in. Free energy is not Overunity. Free energy is not Zero Point Energy. Free energy is all around you. You, yourself, your body is made up of a chemistry set that is combustible, flammable, explosive. You have electricity going through your body. You're floating in a sea of energy. The Earth is the thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. It has wind power. It has solar power. It has hydroelectric power. Static energy, you name it. There's lightning flashing from the sky. There is all kinds of radio waves from space, radio waves from man. There is energy floating in every single direction, through your brain, through the walls, through the floors, everywhere.
Clean energy, green energy, renewable energy, Overunity energy, kid energy, dog energy. I just had to put mine out. It's all around.
It's there.
Yeah, it is.
And so when people are sitting there telling me things like, well, if you got a free energy device, just turn it loose to the world. I've been trying to tell everybody and his brother, it's not one of these devices that's going to make the difference. It's taking the Van de Graaff generator. It's taking the Wimshurst generator. It's taking everything you know from the Bedini motor. Everything you know from basic science. Everything you know from basic electricity. Everything you know from plasma technology, Tesla's coils. All this stuff, putting it in conjunction together. Putting those pieces of the puzzle together and building the best electric generator in the history of time.
Electrostatic energy,
yeah.
Atmos motors, atmospheric energy, yeah.
And this is why I tried to put together what I classified as the dream team. The brilliant minds all over the place. See, you know, I look at guys like Ryan Abrams working on the Slayer Exciter and Terry Woodruff, and they said they admired my work. I admire their work. Even they maybe have a smaller channel as far as subscribers on YouTube. They should have a larger amount of subscribers on YouTube. They said that, they got their inspiration from my videos, which I'm happy that I could inspire somebody to do that. But I want these guys here to be out there where everybody can see their work because the work that they're doing is just incredible. There are brilliant minds all over this world. If we could just get them to the table long enough, if we could get them in the same laboratory to where everybody put these devices together, troubleshooted them real time via either virtual labs or real time via standing right there in a live lab together. Guys like RWG Research, man, he's doing some incredible research out there.
Good old Russ.
Good Russ. He's awesome, man. And we got Dieden out there. Dieden, he's doing all kinds of research out there. And some of these guys out there, they're a little on the high tech. It's got to make sense by the book. I got a friend that I'd make mad, Muddy. This one guy out there, my friend Jim.
Across town, yeah, I know, yeah, Jim.
I make him so mad because I simplify everything to such an extreme that it just messes with his head. When I talk about how electricity is like water, and there's pressure, water pressure, and volume, and current flow, and all that kind of stuff, and I explain to him how, you know, if you got a huge pipe of water, and then you got all that volume of water, and you're forcing it down a smaller pipe of water, you're going to build up pressure, which essentially is what's going on in electricity as well.
Yeah, you shut the valve off at the end, all of a sudden the whole pipe jiggles through the house.
Yeah, well, that hurts his head. He don't like to think about it like that because that ain't the way it was taught to him, you know. So anyway, he said, everything ain't that simple. And I'm telling him, look, nature's an awesome teacher. If you pay attention to what's going on in nature, you might just figure something out, man. So anyway, you know, I'm just saying, if I had not stepped out of the box there as far as going out there trying to find all these other researches, I'd probably be a little bit further along in my personal deal. But my research is more in the plasma technology and the frequencies that you can generate from the plasma technology. Everyone knows that you can change the frequency of the energy by discharging it across the spark gap and the length of that spark gap, the time it takes from to one end of that spark gap to another.
How long it takes to rebuild the charge and make another spark?
Exactly. By definition, what is frequency, Muddy? Do you know?
Cycles per second.
Yeah, so there you go. So whenever you got a wave coming in, determining on how fast that wave will be determined on whether it's down in the hertz or the megahertz or the kilohertz range, how fast it's coming in, how short or how long that waveform is. Heck, whenever they're sitting here looking at the doggone oscilloscope, what do you see on the oscilloscope? You see peaks and valleys, waves, man. Why is that? It's all got waves. It's all like a vibrational frequency. So, if I'm talking about taking and target-specific the electron itself, you know, if you believe in the electron theory that there is actually an electron there, and the way that the atom's made up with the proton, the neutron, and electron. I'm going to add Thomas to the call group.
Sure, why not?
Yay, there he is. How you doing? So if you go by the standard proton, right, and neutron, and electron theory out there, then you know that let's start off from the get-go here. Copper has 29 electrons. What are you doing, man?
Who, me?
You're running water.
Yeah, I'm just waking up, man. I tried to get up.
All right, well, don't flush the toilet. We're on live radio. All right.
No, they've never heard water, running water before. So 29 electrons, though. You're shaking.
All right.
Yeah, one electron is.
Yeah, so we have 29 electrons on the copper atoms. There's one of them is loosely coupled. It's extra. It's out of place. And so we use a brute force magnetic field to shake that thing loose. And when that electron does its transfer from one electron to the next electron and bumps the next one off in line and so on down the line, we call that current flow and electricity as the standard is set out right up there. So what I'm saying is, instead of using a brute force magnetic field to shake the heck out of that electron, which in turn creates friction, which in turn creates heat, that eventually after, like in the standard electric motor, which is 60 hertz, will generate enough heat to destroy that coil in the secondary or the primary, whichever. Instead of wasting all that extra energy trying to brute force that electron off, why not just target specific with the frequency that it takes to disrupt that electron and get that flow going? That's all I'm saying. So, you got your clean energy, and you're not damaging your coils because you're not cramming electrons down the line. You see what I'm saying, man? Anybody? Don't jump to the microphone at once. You might chip a tooth.
Yeah, it worked better if you put a balloon across the pipe there and it act like a capacitor. Then you get some kind of resonance there.
Well, that's
and
what...
Then with the length of your water, it's kind of like inductance. The balloon's more like a capacitance. You put them together either in parallel or in series, and you get different responses.
On one hand, the Tesla geeks out there will talk about resonance.
Hold on, look.
Then we'll talk about getting these two coils to ring with each other. Go ahead, Thomas.
All right, I thought you paused there for a second. Well, I was going to say, I think what you're essentially talking about, the difference between it, and I'm not sure how this is going to affect the end result until it's tested, but that would be like, when you're talking about your power coming from it, that'd be like the difference between what we're using now being the water as it flows, say, through a water system, if your water is your electrons. As the water flows, it pushes against things and basically pushes them around as it flows past them, as opposed to having something that's just sticking out there inside of, like, say, a jar, right? And when the water wiggles, when it vibrates, the eddy currents, you're collecting energy off of the eddy currents because the water's not actually going anywhere. You just basically, you take a balloon, right, and you tap on the side of the balloon, and you get those vibrations all through the balloon. And then you collect the energy off of that vibration as it continues to vibrate.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere, but it's working. It's making sound.
Right.
Well, that video that I sent out there in the chat room...
What you're basically doing is you're doing...
That video that I set out there in the chat room from Justin, it was talking about how they were boiling water with sound waves. We've seen what you can do in a microwave. There are individuals out there that use high-frequency radio waves to separate water and hydrogen from oxygen and hydrogen from water. And so what I'm talking about is essentially what everybody's been talking about all along. You know, when you've got electricity, essentially you're just using the copper wire, the windings in any coil, for a guidance system to guide that around to essentially, instead of having the field on one little tiny strand, you got it on a huge coil and making a larger field by every time those electrons are disrupted. And every time an electron is disrupted and it either changes places or just rocks back and forth, whatever is actually occurring at the level of the atom when the electron release is occurring is what we call electricity. And so with that said, instead of brute forcing it, you use a vibrational frequency, a sound frequency, a radio frequency, or whatever, to do the same work for a lesser amount of input. Does anybody understand that at all?
I got this.
All right, so the thing that I'm seeing is, I don't think that it, in some instances, that it will work for running certain things because it doesn't have that brute force. But in other instances, I think it's probably going to do things that you're saying that it's not going to do, which are actually required, though, to do the work you need them to do, like the light bulb concept where basically the filament gets hot.
Yeah.
If you are shaking those electrons without actually moving them on down the line, I think you're probably going to get the same amount of work in that filament without actually having the electron flow itself. It's still going to heat that filament up and light it up.
Yeah, it's that when you're running that energy across that tungsten element inside your light bulb, that's how it gets the energy. I mean, there's some resistance going on there, and so it builds up heat, and that heat is light. Light is heat, vice versa.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. And it doesn't matter. Think about it this way, okay? If you take a piece of sandpaper, right, and you run it a foot. All the way down a piece of wood, and you run a foot all the way down the other direction across a piece of wood, and you get some Stanley action on there, or you just sit there and you vibrate that to where it's only moving like a quarter of an inch back and forth, it's still going to do as much sanding to that piece of wood, no matter which way you go with that, right?
Yep.
So what you're doing is you're basically moving a shorter distance, you're shaking those the actual atoms at a little bit of distance instead of even completely flip over and lose their piece, because that electron flow, which I think this is probably where you're probably getting off into, that you don't know what electricity is. Everyone out here, you're using something you don't understand. Because the electron flow may not actually be the electrical force itself, or the electricity force that we're thinking is. It's the electron is just getting knocked off by the flipping over the atom.
Well, right.
What we're actually just trying to do is flip the atom over. We don't need the electron off. We just need the electron.
All we need.
Well, and it goes back to. Remember, I showed you those images. The electron shields don't look like what we think about. There actually are several different types, and in some atoms, the electron shield looks more like a bell shape that wants to stay in one position. If you rotate that over, you're going to get an energy output, because it's going to go back to the position it's in, while all the other electrons around it are basically, you know, insisting it being, you know, pushed back over the direction it was.
What I see whenever I look in my mind and I see the current model of how electricity is explained, I see that each electron, the energy that we call the magnetic field, when you take one magnetic field and get it in the general vicinity of another magnetic field, they begin to couple and become one magnetic field. So if you have two coils and they're on two separate power supplies, and they're far enough apart, they both have their own individual magnetic field. But if you slide those two coils together, the closer you get them together, those fields will begin to couple. And once they do, then you will have one larger magnetic field. And so what I see going on the electron down on that scale is that when you rock that atom, that electron may not even actually be leaving that atom. It may be just the case that it rocks enough that magnetic field couples with the next magnetic field, creating a larger magnetic field, and so on down the line. It could be a sheer case of you rocking it all the way down that line, and all these electrons, magnetic fields, couple together just long enough to create that pulse that we call the magnetic field. You see what I'm saying? And in AC current, you'd be rocking them back and forth. It could be a case that the electron really exists, then it never leaves the atom. It's just rocking back and forth, and those fields are coupling, and you either have AC current or DC current, depending on which direction it's going. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, or just depending on whether you're continuing to rotate it one direction, as opposed to stopping and reversing it and rotating the other direction.
Yeah.
What it looks to me like, if you want to put it in gear configuration, because this might actually explain it to people better, your electrons are the electrons on all your atoms are basically gears, and you've got all these atoms that are basically are teeth on the gears, and all these atoms of copper are basically just gears that are jammed together, with the electrons being the teeth. And the typical way that we're doing it, it literally requires forcing the gear to turn so hard you're breaking a tooth off and passing it on down the line. Whereas you're looking at basically trying to rotate it without having to break that tooth off, and still get a rotation that continues rotating all the other gears the other direction, you know, back and forth all the way down the line.
Yeah.
And each time you're pushing it.
Well, in every single...
I mean, think about it. How efficient would a clock be if every time... how efficient would a clock be with gears if every time the gears, you know, turn for a tick on that second as it passes by, a tooth was lost off of each of those gears.
Yeah, well, eventually it would be off of time real bad.
But right, there wouldn't be any rotation because all the gears would be just smooth wheels. There wouldn't be gears anymore.
In every single instance,
so
where
if you can get it to rotate without breaking,
in every single instance where somebody is running a Tesla coil, they use spark gaps, and they use they have the spark gap adjustable so that they can actually tune the frequency by which they're wanting to run this thing, whether it be to get breakout or whatever. you know, the distance between there. There is a sweet spot right there. Somewhere in that spark gap is a sweet spot. Once you hit that sweet spot, you got the thing tuned perfectly, you know. The same thing could be said for the for moving the electron, that there is a frequency by which you can put through that coil initially to get the same amount of electron flow without overpowering the system, without generating heat. Some folks would call it cold electricity. All right, well, if you can just target specific, just the electron alone, just enough to get that energy release, the same energy release, without hitting it with a brute magnetic field, I believe that you would get the same strength of field around that coil of wire. See, if you can take a AC tester, a wireless AC tester, and you can put it around any coil that's plugged into the wall that's running, you will find that that magnetic field stretches all the way out there into space. It's not necessary for it to stretch all the way out there into space. All it has to do is for the primary and the secondaries to be able to react with one another. Like if one coil is on the North Pole and the other coil in the AC motor is on the South Pole, and you know the opposites attract and vice versa. Alright, well, all these fields have to be able to do is connect. They don't have to be able to spread out in space. All they have to be able to do is connect with each other to interact with each other. So you wouldn't have to, you would essentially be taking like a volume knob and adjusting the size of the magnetic field. You're going to get the same exact results without all the waste energy, is what I'm trying to point out. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's time for the crickets. All right, well, in a magnet motor or a generator, either one, you got a magnetic field inside there. The magnets fly around the coil wire or vice versa, depending on how it's designed. Either way, let's just go with the magnets flying around the coil. When the magnetic flux lines of that magnet are crossing the coil, it shakes loose the extra electron, which causes the flow of energy that we're talking about. All right, well, excuse me. That magnetic field from the magnets only has to come in contact with that copper wire to get that result. It doesn't have to shoot way off into space in order to get the same result. So the same thing applies with an electromagnetic field. You only have to have that electromagnetic field strong enough to reach out to that copper wire. And so all I'm talking about doing is adjusting it down, fine-tuning it down to that point to where when you put your tester out there, you should have to have that tester almost right up on that thing before you're ever even getting any kind of measurement whatsoever. You'll still get the same amount of work, but you won't be wasting all that energy. That's the difference between the appliances that we run today and the ones that we will be running tomorrow. If they still use copper coils 10, 20 years down the line, I will be surprised. There's all kinds of materials out there that react with each other when they're hit with the right frequencies that will do pretty cool things.
Well, it may be necessary to use multiple materials in order to extract that DC current capacitance like you're talking about. Because the other thing I'm thinking is it's the amount of energy it takes to flip that over without actually losing the electron may be too much energy if you're using another material that would actually give you the opportunity to rectify it and pull that energy out of it.
Yeah.
You know, for like loading up capacitors and stuff like that too. So then you could actually or batteries. Then you could actually use it as, you know, convert it over from AC to DC and turn it into from cold electricity, as you were calling it, into hot electricity.
Yeah, but see, there are so many directions in which
just you have to have an atom. It takes less energy to shake the electrons.
There's so many directions in which you could go with this, man. There's so many more ways. I've seen people take capacitors and use capacitors to tune an electric motor so that that electric motor doesn't have to have as much energy in order to turn. I've seen it done. My friend Jim was doing it. He made a capacitor bank, and he made different settings switches where he could switch off to how many ever capacitors he wanted to run on there. He'd start that motor up, and then he'd start flipping these switches, and he would tune it, and you could sit there and watch the amp draw go down on this thing. It didn't take near as much energy to run it because of the way that he had this thing set up. So it's every appliance that we got out here is basically ran inefficiently. And the holy grail that everyone is out there looking for, they're not going to find it via 0 point or over unity. They're just not going to do it. We're not talking about trying to get out more than you're putting in. All we're talking about doing is taking the energy that already exists, using it efficiently, moving it from point A to point B without damaging nature. What's so complicated about that? I don't see it.
All right. Well, if it can be done that way, then that means the windmills that everybody is complaining about them just not being powerful enough, so they have to supplant it with oil or, you know, all these other energies that basically are not unlimited, you know, because they're not just getting it for Earth on, you know, I should say, as it appears on Earth, because, you know, we've got, what, like, you know, three billion, I can't remember, years worth of, you know, energy that we're going to have coming from the sun. Well, by the time we get to the end of that cycle, we'll have long since figured out either to rejuvenate it or how to move on and, you know, pick up another star to use or whatever, you know. So the wind that comes from basically the sun hitting the earth would be more than enough with an energy system like you're talking about, just running the standard windmills we're using now, if they were altered to where they use that that form of energy to output,
well,
run the whole house off of it. You know, basically you're able to run off of, you know, 200 or 300 amps instead of having, you know, at that lower voltage, being once it's ran up to that higher voltage, instead of having to have, you know, 2 or 3,000 amps,
yeah,
or even being able to maybe run it off of just 20 or 30 amps and having the whole house running off of it, which the windmills that we have today would be more than capable of putting that out and just, you know, like I was saying, convert it into this new form of energy that you're describing to run the whole household off of it.
Well, it may not necessarily be a newer form of energy. It may have been there all along. See, Muddy works with axial flux wind turbines. He makes some really good ones. He makes some of those turbines out of old ceiling fans. But he can tell
right.
you, and all of us know, that depending on the number of turns of wire that you have on there, depending on the strength of the magnetic field, will determine on how the energy comes up out of there. I told him I want one that has as many high volts as I can get. I don't care about it having... I don't care if this thing could run a light bulb, as long as it's high voltage. It's all I want. All I want is that pressure build up from the high voltage, like, you know, when you touch a Van de Graaff generator, or, you know, I want that static discharge, big old long bolt. That's all I want. Once I take that and run that through an inert gas and energize that gas into the plasma state, from that point on, I'll put that energy back into a capacitor bank and bring it back to usable current afterwards. I don't need it right up front. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to tune this, to fine-tune this, to the point where I can go from a wide range of frequencies all the way down from the hertz range all the way up to the kilohertz range. I can speed it up or slow it down anywhere I want so that I can find the actual sweet point that it takes to run any of these appliances just by moving that electron just enough to get it to release its energy. An electron, if the model is correct, an electron is only so big and it only has so much energy. It's not going to have any more energy than it had when you started. But for some reason, when you're running your magnetic fields across your copper wire and you're creating the current flow that we're talking about, that copper wire never gets smaller. You understand what I'm saying? As many electrons as you had when you started that electric motor, you will have the exact number of electrons when you stop that electric motor. So you're not destroying any energy. You're not destroying any material in the process of running that electric motor. So that tells me that every bit of that energy that's coming off of that electron, however you're moving it, is endless. That electron will continuously revert back to its natural state, its natural field. It will be there just like a regular magnet that you set down on the table. That magnetic field, those flux lines, they never stop. They're continuous. 10, 20, 100 years down the line, that magnet will still have that magnetic field around it. And that is what I'm saying, that if the atom and the electron model that we use as our standard version today is correct, that electron has its own magnetic field that never goes away. All you're doing is interrupting and coupling and uncoupling and coupling and uncoupling back and forth to get either AC or DC current. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you still got the same amount of magnetic field for every electron, even after you shut it off. It's still there. It's just in its natural state. And when we disrupt it with a magnetic field, then we get those fields to couple with each other, and it gives us the reaction that is the energy that we call electricity. All I'm talking about doing is, instead of using a sledgehammer, to use a little tack hammer instead in order to get that same release.
Right.
So, does that make me insane? Does any of it make any sense to you at all? I mean, where'd you go, Muddy? Did we lose Muddy?
Posting?
I don't know.
Let's see, there's some messages in here.
This is terrible for live radio.
Oh. He had to step away, so.
Oh.
He'll be back. We neither one of us were going to put the actual text in the chat. He didn't want to interrupt.
Alright, well, either way, like I said, by the standard model of the atom, the proton, the neutron, electron, whatever is actually occurring down there at that level, right now we use a strong magnetic field to get that reaction. When the magnetic field stops...
Right, most people... Here's the thing. Well, I was going to say, here's the thing. Most people do not care how their equipment runs. All they care is that it runs. So what we need to do is we need a few people who actually do care about that and would like to tinker around with that, to sit down and give it a test and find out what it can do, and then, you know, when it's brought out to the public, what it can and can't do, and it's doing a bunch of stuff that they want it to do, then there won't be any, you know, there will be no way to basically stop the torrent of energy in the form of, you know, money and resources to convert over to it if it's more efficient. Because I mean, look how easy it was to get the public to adopt fluorescent bulbs.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, man.
They flicker constantly. They're hard on the eyes for them because they're so cheap to run. People are more than willing to drop those filament bulbs and run right on over to those fluorescent bulbs. And the same thing with the LED light. Now everybody's rushing to that. And you remember when fluorescent bulbs first came onto the market for, you know, the screw-in spots and whatnot, the price was not cheap. They were actually more expensive by far than the standard filament bulb. And the same thing is going on with the LED bulbs, and yet they're still doing it. So if you can show them, by getting this group together, something that's even more efficient will cost them less money, ultimately, both in, you know, cost of energy and cost of replacement of electronics or electrical devices, they're gonna come rushing at you. You know, they're gonna be pulling that Fry from Futurama thing, saying, "Shut up and take my money." You know,
well,
so you won't have any trouble getting them to accept it. We're just gonna try it. You know,
here's the thing. Listen, we're talking about two things here. First off, my research, which I just got through explaining. The second off is, right now, we have every single piece of the puzzle to literally build a generator that everyone can use already right now that you can plug right into your house. We have that technology. It's there. Every single piece of the puzzle. Ryan has a piece of it. You got a piece of it. I got a piece of it. We all got a piece of the puzzle. It's there. Everything from the WIM search to the Van de Graaff to the plasma technology, everything that we've been talking about for all these years. This is why I tried to put the dream team together whilst in the background still working on my research as far as actually tuning the actual electron itself, the specific frequency that it takes to get that reaction. If things would have went the way that I was hoping they would go, we'd already be sitting here working on the device that used everything that we already know. Muddy knows how to wind coils, and we know how to get high voltage. We all know how to make a Van de Graaff generator. We all know how to make a Wimshurst generator. We all know how to work, how to do magnetic bearings. You know, we all know how to do magnetic coupling from one flywheel to the next flywheel. If you look all over YouTube, there is an answer for every single question you got on how to do something. It's there. It's been there all along. And I keep saying this. I keep pointing it out. Take the Van de Graaff.
Well, and I put together that device to convert high voltage DC into high voltage AC current too. So
yep. And Diadin was doing some stuff.
That looks static. Mm-hmm.
Diadin was doing some stuff in his last video related to this whole deal. And Ryan's doing wireless energy. All this stuff, man. Instead of putting all your eggs in one basket and trying to build the perfect Bedini motor or the perfect whatever free energy device, put these brilliant minds in the same room and put this doggone thing together. Get it over with, because I'm tired of talking about it. You know, if I had the resources to do it all myself, it would be done by now. But there's certain, I'm not a mathematical genius. I need, if I'm going to put the dream team together, I need somebody who can weld really good. I need somebody who can use a milling machine. I need somebody who knows chemistry. I need to put the dream team together with all the raw materials and the right shop with all the tools, and we'll build it. That's it. That's all there is to it. I don't have the funds to fly everybody over to my shack, and then whenever they did get to my shack, if they didn't bring their tools with them, I don't have enough tools or materials to do it.
Well, no, everybody doesn't have to be in the same place. We just need the person who knows how to put all the pieces together to send all the parts that they made to that one person. They just need the right motivation to do that. You know?
Well, there's a lot of good craftsmen on there. If you look at some of the work that Russ from RWG Research does, his craftsmanship is awesome. And I've seen the work that Ryan does. I love his work. I love Terry's work. I mean, all of y'all. And your art that you may not think a lot of, when I see the work that you've done when you're making your stuff like your goggles and stuff like that, it's meticulous. It looks good. I mean, it looks professional. And, you know, all of you guys, Muddy, I've seen Muddy's work. Muddy sat there and explained how to take some coffee cans and build a Stirling engine out of coffee cans. And it ran. And he was meticulous about it. And when he got done, it not only ran, it looked good. That's the dream team, man. That's what it was all about to begin with. To get all these guys together, everyone gets credit for their work. Everyone puts this thing together. I'm telling you, if only I could have everybody in one place for 1 month, this world would have the free energy device that they've been wanting. You know, what more can I say?
I don't think it'd even be one device. I think the whole group could actually get our shop to work on whatever it is and complete each of our ideas.
Well, so, either way, whatever comes up out of there would be brilliant.
Get it going.
It would be brilliant. You know, I'm tired of year after year. You know, the search for free energy is over. I know it's there. You know it's there. We all know it's there. The energy is there. It's a matter of taking it from point A to point B. No matter what you're looking at, it has a frequency range. You know, and there is energy in everything. There is energy potential all around you. You know, if you throw nature off, nature will balance itself out. When nature's doing its balancing act, that rocking back and forth or whatever, and you're grabbing up that energy and you're using that energy potential as nature's rebalancing itself, then there you go, man. It may just be a case of you're just guiding the water. You know, like somebody has a river downstream and they cut off a loop and goes back into the river, and they're not really doing anything bad to the river. All they're doing is diverting some of that water off to the side and back into the river. You see what I'm saying? Putting it a little closer to their house. It's as simple as that. So, did we lose Muddy? He ain't back yet.
He's back.
All right. Well, let's say I'll be over here and see if I can dig up a song to play. You do to do. Okay. How about this cup of Joe that's right there in front? All right, everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back in a few.
I would. Oh, God, yes. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah, I need a cup of the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn, made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug, or fine china, been hooked up to IVs, need constant supplies, and a trip to my urges might verge on perverted, preferably brown tea. I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain, I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant's trunk with a couple of monks who are utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The difference between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please, Earl Grey.
Yes please,
Earl Grey.
Yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely Assam.
Lovely
Assam.
Lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Oh, we're gone.
Go on, not wrong.
Yeah. I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swing amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal, let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long. Ooh,
long.
Ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks. Herbal.
No thanks.
Herbal.
No thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. I want to see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter, it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam, or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your snorting coffee in a proper cup of coffee pot and spot me loving teapot to your Ponzi rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, sodding off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea, or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour, my hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, I love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell your grandma.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance.
from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
21 gigawatts!
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911. Don't learn about electrical safety by accident. What do you think, Thomas?
I was going to say, do not look into laser with remaining eye.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. So anyway, essentially what we've been talking about is about... I'm not trying to tell the world that we got the Holy Grail. All I'm trying to do is tell the world that instead of using our electricity that we use the way that we use it right now, which is totally inefficient, to redesign the way that we are using it, the way that we're tapping into all the energy that's around us. You know, I was talking about the atom, the proton, the neutron, and the electron. And the electron flow is what we actually call our electricity. So, when you look underneath the electron microscope, you can see the atom. IBM did a nifty little stop animation where they actually took some atoms and moved them around, and they had a little animation called Atom Boy. You can look it up on Google. You can actually see the atoms moving around, a little stick figure guy. But when you go to zooming in on the electron, you can't see the electron. All you see is, it when you zoom in on the atom, to try to see what's going on around the atom, it gets real fuzzy. Kind of like the same thing that happens when you stare off into space with the most powerful telescope we got. You can only see so far, and it gets fuzzy. They determine whether or not there's a planet around a star by the way that either the star wobbles or the fluctuation of the light around there. There's like, if the light flickers and something went past it or whatever. Then they also use color
spectrographic analysis
to try to determine if there's a planet around there, its makeup, its chemistry makeup, whether or not it's a planet that has water on it. So all of these things, without actually standing there looking at it, you know, and being able to test it physically, are all speculation and theory. And so what I'm saying is no different than that. All I'm saying is if you are definitely shaking the electron loose, and you're using this amount of force to do so, and it only takes this amount of force to do so, why waste all the excess energy on the opposite side when you can target specific it right at this frequency range here and get the same amount of work done? That's all I'm saying. Does that sound insane to you? Man, there went the cricket.
I would say it's not really even necessary to give a response to that.
Well, so if you look at the model and you think about, let's say you actually knew a physical size of the atom, and you actually knew a physical size of all the different parts of the atom, and you actually knew the specific size of the electron itself, you know, A little metal bearing only has so much mass to it. It has its own field, you know. It has protons, neutrons, electrons in there. It only has so much mass. So there's only so much energy potential in that little bearing. So if that little bearing was the electron, and you were holding that electron in your hand, it only has so much energy. When you're shaking that electron back and forth, it's not losing that energy. It always has that energy potential. Otherwise, the longer you run your electric motor, the less energy that electron would have, and eventually it would slow down and finally come to a stop because it was completely depleted of all energy. And so the magnetic field in that electron isn't changing. All it's doing is fluctuating and causing a reaction somewhere within the atom to the next atom, from electron to another electron, and that eventually creates a large enough field that we call electricity. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The energy will remain the same no matter how you get it from point A to point B. And so if I can vibrate this at a certain frequency range, whether it be in the hertz, megahertz, or kilohertz range, and get the same reaction, like, you know, as opposed to using a microwave oven to boil water, you're using sound frequencies to boil water, or any vibrational frequency for that matter, anything that shakes up those atoms and electrons, shakes them around, which in turn creates friction, which in turn creates heat, and so on and so forth. If I can target specific, just that electron alone, just enough to either get it to lean in one direction to couple with the next one's magnetic field and create a larger magnetic field and create the energy that we're talking about, there's your holy grail of electricity. There's your code electricity, because you can literally tune this up or down. If you want to destroy that deal, the electric motor, take it over 60 hertz. In some countries, it's only 50 hertz. But here in the States, most generally, they're around about 60 hertz. Anything above that will burn it up. And so if it doesn't take quite 60 hertz to get there, wouldn't I be using less energy if I brought it down to, say, like 40 or 50 hertz? What do you think?
Well, it sounds actually more like it would be using more energy if you do that.
Well, because maybe it's the case I got to go higher.
Yeah, the slower you're pulsing, the further you're... It's like basically the slower the pulse, the longer you're stretching the rubber band before it breaks.
Well,
if you stretch it too long, eventually it snaps and breaks. But if you're just stretching it like a very, very short distance, you can get a lot more flexes out of that rubber band, and a lot more energy can be basically expelled and absorbed by it over and over again.
Plasma reactor is a tuner. That's all it is. A variable capacitor is a tuner. A potentiometer is a tuner. What else do we got in that range? Anyway, it's all tuners. Mm-hmm. But, so I'm trying to build the most precise tuner so that I can do the high-tech version of what we're trying to do on the low-tech version, to actually run the inefficient appliances at which everybody wants free electricity. It's there, doggone it. We can already build the simple model. We just got to get the crew together to do so. Now, I can do it myself. It's going to take me a long time because I got to scavenge around for parts. But it may be that somebody has some parts already made. All we got to do is put it together. Think about how much energy you could get off of a Wimshurst generator if instead of only two discs on there, you had 20 discs on that same horizontal shaft.
Right.
You see what I'm talking about? Man, that thing would light you up.
They just need to be going opposite directions to get the power that you need.
Yeah.
So.
But we already know that. We already know that you can get a massive amount of high voltage. It's really super simple to get high voltage. All you got to do is bring, if you're doing it the old style way, like with copper coils and like the wind turbines or whatever, all you got to do is use thinner wire and more turns on the coils, and you get high voltage. Heck, they do high voltage in cars, little power packs in your cars. These things, they'll light you up. They do high voltage with Slayer exciters, you know? So, it's not like we don't have that knowledge. It's already there. And from taking high voltage, if you can sit there and dump it into a capacitor, I've said this before, I'll say it again, an 800 microfarad capacitor will literally blow your hand right off. That's how much energy potential is stored in that capacitor. Now you imagine you got a large capacitor bank. Instead of having batteries, you got a large capacitor bank, and you're able to fill that thing up real time. I mean, you're just pumping high voltage after high voltage in that sucker real time. They'll fill up so fast that if you don't use that energy, those capacitors will blow up. They'll destroy themselves. That's a lot of energy, man. Mm-hmm. You know, you can rub your shoes, which are most generally rubber soles nowadays, because we buy all our stuff in Korea, Taiwan, and China. You rub your tennis shoes across the carpet. You build up a static charge and you go over there and shoot a lightning bolt across to your brother's ear. That should tell you something, man. Mm-hmm. You rub a balloon on your head, you can take and put it over next to a metal can, anything metal, and you can watch it shoot a lightning bolt from that rubber balloon over to the can.
So, right.
A lot of energy potential. And so we're not talking about... it's not heresy against the whole laws of physics. It's the conservation of energy. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, proves my theory. But at the same time, I'm not trying to create any energy, and I'm not trying to destroy any energy. All I'm doing is trying to change the method. Instead of riding a train, we're riding a scooter to get there. You don't take as much energy to ride a scooter than it does a train.
Right. Well, as I say, if you want to put it in more specific terms, basically, if you only got one person who needs to get from point A to point B, there's no point in firing up and running a whole train just to drive that one person.
Yeah.
You can just toss them on that scooter and get them on down the road.
Go look at your alarm clock, man, your digital alarm clock. Pick it up and look at the volt range on the bottom of it. It's got a transformer in there. It's probably running at 60 hertz. It's 120 volts AC that steps it down to 9 volts AC. So you're using a 120 volt transformer to make a 9 volt digital alarm clock work.
Right.
Why?
9 volt DC, because it's basically not only dropping the voltage down to 9 volts, but it's also converting it over so that it's all going one direction with that little bridge rectifier.
Why the way? 9 volts AC, 9 volts DC. Instead of having a transformer in every single appliance you got out there, why don't you just have a smart grid that will only put what it requires to run it in there? You know, it wouldn't be nothing to build a test circuit to say this thing will only run at whatever, and the smart grid puts 9 volts to your alarm clock, and whatever, it takes 12 volts to your computer. And instead of taking and having 100 AC transformers, step down transformers all the way through your house, you only have one transformer that sets out. Heck, they do it in computers all the time, man. Have you seen the power supply on a computer?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's one transformer with a bunch of transformers built into it by tapping the coil.
Yeah.
So, that way, basically, the amount of wraps determines how many volts you're getting out of it versus how many volts are going in. They also wrap multiple coils in there because, as you said before, the coils are all coupling together, so... You get a 120 volt pulse across like a coil that's only got 10 wraps, as opposed to a coil that's got 5 wraps. And the 5 wrap coil actually has thicker wire, so it's going the same distance that the 10 wrap coil is going. It's width wise, it's just there's only 5 turns before it's done. So you're reducing it from, like, that one is turning it down from 5 volts, or 120 volts to 12 volts, and the other one's dropping it down to 6 volts.
Yep, and there's some in there for 5, and I think some in there for 3 on some systems. But there's the key, man. Instead of
I was just trying to keep the math simple, yeah, rather than, you know, making it complex where you have to, you know, calculate that portion.
Well, either way,
less than 5 to get down to 5 volts.
If you have 4 separate voltages going on, and mm-hmm. for each one of these 4 separate voltages, you put 4 separate transformers, you're wasting energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so why do that? Why not do that with your house? If design the system so that you've got a main transformer that will step down the voltage, and you have a plug that your alarm clock will only fit in the triangle socket as opposed to the square socket, so you're not getting more than 9 volts. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, now your whole entire house is all running off of maximum 4 transformers instead of 100 transformers, and you're saving energy.
Right.
Common sense, man. That's why I call it mad science. I got all these doggone transformers all the way through my house. I got one to run my TV, one to run my VCR, one to run my TV screen or whatever. Throughout the house, phone chargers, doggone answering machines, and then you got all your different separate appliances that are not running continuously, like your blender and your microwave and all that kind of stuff, and those aren't on continuous. It's the other ones that you don't think about that are draining your electricity.
Vampire circuits.
Yeah.
And basically, whenever you're not using them, they're still sucking down little bits of energy all day long, and at the end of the month, that all adds up.
Yep.
So
if you want to save electricity, if you ain't using it, unplug it, because your TV's still using electricity even when it's not on. Your answering machine?
Unplugging and plugging it in will end up damaging the plug. If you really want to save energy, just get a power strip with a button on it so you can flip that and basically break that circuit.
Well, there you go. Put everything on a power strip, and if you're not using it, turn the button off.
Should be on a power strip with surge protection anyway.
Yeah.
You know? So, especially electronic equipment, because the components that, I mean, you think about it, your devices, you know, they have all these little tiny components that are very delicate and whatnot in there, and what do we know about chains and their strength, you know? A chain's strength to hold something is only as strong as its weakest link.
Well, our weakest link is the inefficient system by which we plug everything under the sun. It's like, you know, my wife, I'm surprised she hasn't started a fire over here, because she'll get those four-way plugs that you plug into one socket, and she'll have like 10 things plugged into one thing, and I'm telling her, woman, you can't do that. They're only rated for so much amperage, and they're going to get hot and catch fire. You know?
It's like you get them all hooked up and plugged in, there's an opportunity at some point somebody's going to turn them all on at once, or turn enough of them on, you're going to draw more amperage than you're actually able to pull through that circuit.
Yeah, and so, you know, when I go in there and I see a black plug, and I tell her, look, lady, you're going to burn the house down. I finally got her to common sense, and she uses them efficiently now, unless she's sneaking one, which... if there's an energy hog, my wife knows her. But, you know, either way, I'm just saying, you know, we're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to get anything that isn't already there. All we're doing is just trying to change the method by which we use the energy. I mean, it's there. That's plain and simple.
Right.
We've already found free energy. We've been setting it all along. Now we need to figure out the point A to point B portion of it. If I can plug two dissimilar metals into the dirt and get voltage even in the millivolt range, and actually I've done it where I've got it actually in the volt range, and that's just plugging two metals into the dirt, you know? If I can get energy out of the freaking dirt, then I should be able to get energy out of anything out there, period. You know, that
Well, I was going to say, we're pulling energy out of the air, too. When they're running those wires around in the air and collecting voltage off of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's just basically rubbing against that wire, you know, generating that that electron flip that we were talking about before.
Well, if you think...
cascading it.
If you think about the energy floating around in the air like bubbles, you know, you get those little kids got those little bubble things and they blow bubbles up in the air and you can watch these bubbles. As these bubbles bump into each other, some of them pop and some of them merge. And so there's an energy transfer going along in that, just in those bubbles alone. And so as all these hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen atoms, molecules in the air are floating around, bumping into each other, there's energy release going on. And the method you're talking about, like the static, where the atmospheric group were stretched, they had two 200-foot poles up in the air. They have a wire stretched across there with nanoparticles of carbon on there. And they're pulling 2,000 volts out of the sky, man. And they're putting
them
down.
They only switched to the carbon after they already found that it worked with the copper. So,
well,
they're just looking for a more efficient means, so that all they have to use is that wire. I still think that they need to build basically like a sheet of some sort, even if it runs, like you basically coat the whole thing with a metal paint that's going along in a snake formation, running back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, all the way until you get to the other end to build up the longer length, or running multiples of those to get the voltage that you're wanting, even on low energy states in the atmosphere, and then stacking them to get more amperage out of it,
yep.
As well as having all that voltage, so to hit their potential, then they'd be able to, you know, complete what they're trying to do.
Well,
or compact it just so that, you know, it's more efficient for everybody, so they don't have to have, you know, a four or five, you know, mile per side square area to run that thing around in a big loop. So,
but all they're doing is literally moving energy from one point to the next. They're not creating anything. They're not destroying anything. They're not even breaking any of the laws, known laws of physics, but it works. All they're doing is using a different guidance system by which to get it from point A to point B. It's as simple as that. And that's all I'm talking about doing. I'm talking about redefining how we're actually shaking that electron loose, if indeed that's the case. You know, I haven't seen the electron with my own two eyes. I've seen atoms. I've seen fuzzy pictures of when they zoom in and little, looks like little fields and little patterns going on in certain materials that they zoomed in on electron microscope. But you get to a certain point, you can't see any farther with the technology that we've got today. It's all blurry. It's all fuzzy. So who knows what's actually occurring at that level until we're able to get down to that level to see what's occurring. Then it's all speculation on how the electron is actually flowing. It may be a case that the electron hasn't even moved. You're just disrupting the field around the electron.
Well, again, you know, like I said, to the general populace, they don't care. All they care is when they flip the light switch on the wall, the light comes on. When they go up to the TV and push the button, the TV pops on. So if you can make it work for them, they don't care how it works. All they care is that it does work.
Well, I guess my deal is, I guess my feud is with the alternative energy community, you know, getting on the same page. You know, I speak heresy because I say I don't care about current watts and amps and all that kind of stuff. But from point A to point B, even if you're talking about how much energy I'm using to generate my plasma, the amperage is at such a minuscule rate that it's not even worth even talking about. Even if it's in a tiny milliamp, and then that's all the amperage that I'm using to energize that inert gas into the plasma state. All I need is high voltage to do so. I've been doing it for forever and a day. I have to read the amperage off of my 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter, but it's in the millivolt range.
Have you tried using for the gas stage of it? The plasma stage? Have you tried using a fluorescent bulb? Because essentially, you just have two wires on either end that are looped, and it energizes that gas that's in there until it gets excited. And once it gets excited,
then it takes next to no current to keep it going.
Yeah, well, if you look at all these people out there holding fluorescent bulbs up there to the coils and everything and getting them to light up, they're doing the same thing I'm talking about doing right there.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Have you thought about maybe trying to use one of those in lieu of the plasma chamber that you're wanting to build with the other designs you've got, and see if maybe you can use it for the tuning process?
Well, you know, it's worth a shot. I mean, I'll do some experiments after I get off of this radio show and see if that does work. I have some spectrum tubes that are full of argon, and so, you know, I can run high voltage through these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I put a variable capacitor or potentiometer at either end of it to whatever, you know, variac to just adjust the doggone amount of voltage going in and check the differences and the frequencies coming out the other end. Yeah, that sounds plausible. I think I will try that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted my high-tech version because I want to be able to not only change the frequency as it's coming out the other end in the form of energy that's coming out of that plasma, but I also want to be able to have tap points inside that reactor that I can tap into that energy from within, as well as doing the frequencies on the opposite side, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Right. I've seen people wrap coils around the fluorescent bulb and using that to either change the way the light bulb works or to pull power off of the light bulb too.
Yeah.
So, for a fluorescent tube. So
all we're really talking about here is building a different set of railroad tracks. That's it, man. It's that simple. You know, how we're guiding it and what we're doing with it when we get it out of there. 60 hertz is a really fast rate at which you're shaking the crap out of the electrons. Anything else after that is starting to get into the danger zone, to where that transformer or that electric motor will get hot and eventually burn the coating off the wire. And instead of 1,000 turns of copper wire, you're down to 1 turn of copper wire, because all the copper wire merges with itself and you can't create a large magnetic field that way. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
If these copper wires are separated, you're going to get more energy out of them as far as the magnetic field, the strength of that magnetic field. But if they're all one single, then you follow me so far?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what destroys the electric motors.
Right. Well, like I said, it still may come down to, too, that the ride keeps getting bumpier and bumpier until you hit a certain speed. Once you get up to that speed, then it smooths out to glass smooth.
Yeah.
You know, feel on the road, no matter what the road's like.
And once you get up to that speed, it doesn't take as much to keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to work as hard.
Well, when you get rid of the bumpy feel, that means you're basically getting rid of the friction.
Yeah.
Or you're not dropping down in and back up out of all those little nicks and grooves and whatnot along the surface of the road with your wheels. They're just basically, you know, kind of like what he was talking about, running on their tiptoes, you know. So, just running on the tips of the surface.
Well, Tesla sat around for hours flipping a knife switch on and off, to see, try to figure out why it is that whenever you flip this thing on, and I know that probably at least 80% of all the people out there listening have went in the room, one room or another, and flipped the light switch on and blew the light bulb out.
Mm-hmm.
That's because there's a lot of energy potential stored up behind there, and that sudden flip of the switch sent a surge to that light bulb that overpowered that light bulb and blew it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're wasting, man. That's all there is to it. We're just flat out wasting energy. And I'm trying to design a system by which not to waste that energy, to where you, instead of having a magnetic field that stretches out three feet past your transformer, it's just down there right in the range around that copper wire, just enough to keep that electron flow going and nothing more. You don't need all that waste energy in order to create the energy that we're talking about. You don't need it.
Right.
So, As far as free energy, it's out there. As far as building a device to plug into your house, it is ready to go. Whenever the world wants to put it together, we'll do so. Then, until then, I guess we'll just keep on trying to gather up all the junk that we can get and put devices together. Eventually, somebody will put one together. It's that simple. But when it gets down to the end of the road, you're going to find out something when you look at this device. It's not just one application that they're using. They took bits and pieces, you know, just like a motor in your car. You realize how many people it took to put that motor together? How many people it took to make all the parts? And how many ideas had to come into play in order to make that car work like it does? With everything from the combustion side of it to the exhaust side of it to the electrical side of it, you know, and all the way down to your radio and your dome light, man. There was so much involved in putting that car together that we all just take for granted as if, you know, hey, this one factory did this and that's cool, you know. No, it was many factories and many workers and many brilliant minds from all over the globe who improved on an idea way back to Henry Ford or even further back.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can get all these brilliant minds together to actually do something intelligent, everybody will have exactly what they want and they won't be paying electric bills. And I'm not going to ask for permission from the power company or the man to do it. I'm just going to keep on doing the research that I'm doing. If it takes me longer to actually get a device together, then so be it. It just have to be because I'm only one man. But if I can put the dream team together and we can get in the right crew, I can guarantee you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, less than 30 days, we'll come up out of there with the machine that everybody wants. Because all the parts are there. All the pieces of the puzzle. Every single piece of the puzzle to build the most efficient generator in the history of time are right there before your very eyes. It's just a matter of who wants to get up and help me put this puzzle together. I ain't asking for any money. I'm not asking for any donations. I'm not asking for anybody to change their ways of thinking. All I'm asking for everybody is to take the knowledge that they've got, combine it together, put this doggone thing together, put up or shut up kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I'm feeling about the whole deal. I'm going to build my tuner. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Nobody's going to stop me from doing that. Now, as far as me building a generator that will run my entire house, if I can do it, I'm going to do it, and I'll give that information to everybody and his brother. But right now, it's the resource that is lacking, you know. I can build generators. I've showed everybody in I don't know how many different videos how simple it is to build a generator. Any 12-volt, any permanent magnet motor out there can be a generator. You know, you can run a magnet motor backwards and you generate electricity. Any AC alternator can be a generator. All you have to do is energize that first coil. You can hook it to a battery. You can run it backwards and you're running, you're charging electricity. Either way, you know. You can turn any electric motor into a generator. You can build, take parts out of old microwaves, magnets, any magnets, the coils, the wires, and you can build a generator. It's that simple. You can get energy out of the dirt. You can get energy from the wind. You can get energy from the air. Everyone knows how to build a generator. But to build one that's efficient enough and powerful enough to run all the crap that's in your house. You see what I'm saying? Right? Yeah, doggone it, we lost the call again. That stinks. Actually, the call dropped at the last minute there, and so I guess I'll just say that, look, folks, you know, if the power grid ever goes down, I hope you remember some of the ideas that I put out there for everybody. I hope that you understand that, you know, if you're going to have electricity in times when the power grid's down, you're going to have to pre-plan. There's all kinds of different deals out there, like biofuel. There's wood gasifiers. There's wind turbines. There's solar power. There's hydro power, hydro generation systems. There are so many different ways out there that you can tap into the energy that's all around you. And until we can get the Dream Team together to actually build the holy grail of all electric generators, which I know 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt is fully possible. Until I can get to the point where I can prove my theory that you can shake the electron loose with the right frequency and get the same amount of energy out the other side that it takes to run everything, then we'll just have to be the way we are. Ah, Rudd. Doggone. Well, I lost my internet connection. Figures. That interruption there, folks. The doggone internet connection dropped on me. Stay tuned for the Hope Show. Peace and love, everybody.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!